Hey everybody, welcome to Little Monsters Movie Podcast.
Good evening.
We're going to tell you tonight, we're both kind of got colds.
Ugly son bitches tonight. We were making out and he gave me his cold and...
Oh boy.
I can't stand you.
Unbelievable. But yeah, a little stuffy here, so a voice may sound change. But anyways, we're going to do Psycho, 1960.
1960.
Alfred Hitchcock.
I think this is like the classiest movie we've done. This is Hitchcock,
a true
artist.
Classy, definitely. Yeah, and, it even starts off a little film noirish. I mean, you know.
Right. I mean, this is kind of like, you know, most people would say the introduction of the slasher into the American popular cinema.
Yep.
This is Alfred Hitchcock, guys. And if you haven't watched any Alfred Hitchcock movies, if you haven't seen this movie, shame on you. Like, if you're watching Bates Motel, and I don't watch Bates Motel. He does.
Yeah.
And so he'll tell you about that later. But, I mean... You know, I mean,
you got
Jamie Lee Curtis, her mother's in this movie, all right, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
But, and there's a lot of cool horror stuff that goes with this movie. There's a lot of cool history about this movie.
Well, yeah, we'll start right off. Let's just say where all this came from.
Yep.
I mean, we'll talk to serial killer who, let me talk about that in a second. Ed Gein, okay. Right. 1940s.
30s? Yeah, that, I think after the war.
Yeah, okay. Late 1940s,
he 50s. Committed his crimes.
But and I'm not sure he's even serial killer. Supposedly two victims.
He was mostly a necrophiliac.
Yeah, mostly necrophiliac.
He mostly raided graves.
Yeah, which is very interesting. I mean, he
and
pretty much, yeah. Well, he murdered the two that they know of. It was Bernice Warden and Mary Hogan.
Yes.
Those are the definite.
One was a hardware store worker. One worked at a bar, I believe. Like bartender.
Yeah. And found them, hung like a deer,
Yes.
The whole nine yards, cleaning them out.
We'll get a little bit more, I think, as the movie goes on about it.
Yeah.
But, I get, the only true connection here is the mother issue, I think.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean...
Ed Gein had a very domineering mother.
All these movies,
mother.
which take a little bit from Ed Gein. I mean, you got Psycho, which we're going to talk about, the main movie we're here. Then we go to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Because Ed Gein would actually wear the masks,
the skins. So that comes from him, because Ed Gein did a lot of used a lot of body parts. I mean, there were, I think... 20, 30, 40 skulls? I forget how many.
Tons of skulls. So bowls made out of skulls.
And yeah, he would eat his cereal out in
lampshades
his food right out
because he was very interested in cannibal tribes. He'd read all these pulp magazines about cannibal tribes, Nazi war crimes.
So he used everything from body. He had a nipple belt.
He had a nipple belt. A belt made out of female nipples. They were always female parts, by the way. He had this. So that's kind of where Norman Bates ties into this. And then there's also the, what's his name, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, which is actually... there's never been a recorded serial killer like Buffalo Bill. He's like a combination of Ed Gein, Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy. As a matter of fact, I think the classic scene in Silence of the Lambs where he's got the cast on his hand trying to move that sofa, I believe Ted Bundy actually used that. That was one of his little things that he would use.
Yeah.
Dahmer, the skinning and the things, and the Ed Gein, the wearing of the skin. So
how much they... Ed Gein.
They incorporated a lot of different serial killer types to make Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs. There's never been one quite that interesting.
But boy, he's had an effect on the horror genre up through the years.
Well, he's kind of like the first American one. It made big news. I mean, he was... I guess just to get into a little bit of it, he was born with a father, brother, mother.
Right.
And
father died of a heart attack early age.
Right. The mother was very domineering with the two sons.
Yeah, believed to have pretty much, I mean, she was a whore. I mean, she, slept around. I think she even slept with the two sons.
I didn't stumble across that in my reading. It could be.
Okay.
But she definitely hated, like, all other women and bred that into her children.
Right.
She's a prostitute. Women, basically all other women were prostitutes. And that's really where...
Evil.
And I guess the older brother... was kind of wanting to get away from that, get away from the family, move away.
Yeah.
And then one day they were clearing out some shrubs out in some more, and supposedly there was a fire.
Yeah.
And, he turned up dead. But I guess later on they found, like, contusions on his head and everything, but they never pursued it.
Yeah.
So he may have very well have killed his brother. And he was asked about
likely.
It, but I don't know if he ever gave a straight answer. He was found, after he committed these two murders and all these robbed graves and body parts were found in his home.
Yeah.
You know, he was found, you know, guilty but insane, and it was, you know, held in institutions for the criminally insane.
Yeah, he was pretty lucky, though, at the time. I mean, he kind of got caught during the time to where the death penalty wasn't there and stuff like that. And he lived his life up until 77.
And he lived out in the middle of nowhere. And it's really, you know, he went after the lady that worked in the hardware store. And, you know, just his receipt with his signature or whatever happened to be there. And that's kind of how they traced him to the murder, that he was the last one to see her. So, but he definitely had a big mother complex, because when they investigated his home, the rooms that she lived in were pristine.
Oh, yeah, didn't touch nothing.
Right.
Which goes off of, you know, Psycho a little bit.
Right. That was where the inspiration for the novel by Robert Bloch came in, called Psycho, that Alfred Hitchcock based his screenplay on. Well, he didn't write the screenplay, but he based the film that he directed on. But even, I haven't read Psycho. Mm-hmm. I have it on my e-reader, but I've never read it.
I haven't
either. And from what I understand, it's actually pretty different. Like, Norman Bates in the book is kind of, like, overweight and just real... Like, you hang around him and you know something's wrong with him. He's very creepy. Whereas, I like how, you know, Anthony Perkins' take on Norman Bates, you know, very unassuming and innocent, almost. Yeah. And, you know... Like, even when he's walking around, he's eating candy corn all the time. He's eating candy like a little kid.
Yeah, I like the little bag.
To add to his innocence.
Like the little bag of candy that he's, chowing down.
So that's kind of like where, you know, that all sort of came from. It was kind of hard to get this movie made at first. No studio thought this would, you know, make a good movie.
Yeah.
Ended up being a huge box office success. People waiting around the block in lines to get into the movie. They said even Hitchcock tried to buy up as many copies of the paperback novel as he could, so people wouldn't find out the twist ending.
Well, that's right, I remember that. Oh yeah,
he didn't want people to know how it ended.
That snake.
And if you haven't seen this movie, we're gonna mess it up for you. So stop now and come back later if you haven't seen it. A lot of people probably already know, but or think you know.
Because
it's a very disturbed young man, and so he used. This is the time when Alfred Hitchcock had his TV show, which I know you and I would watch. Alfred Hitchcock Presents, great like thriller, mystery kind of stories. Not really horror.
Yeah,
once in a while there'd be something supernatural, I think, but for the most part, just kind of like suspense stories,
right?
Whodunits kind of thing.
Exactly.
And he always introduced the show with that "Good evening," which is what I said at the beginning of the show. So if you got that, you know where I'm coming from. So he used, to save money, he used the TV crew, filmed it in black and white. This is the film he did after North by Northwest, which is considered one of the greatest,
movies. I'm drinking one of my kids' hugs.
Little hugs. He didn't offer me one.
Cheapest drink ever.
I got my drink.
Well, you're always,
I'm always prepared. I'm always parched.
Yeah.
So he filmed it in black and white, used his TV crew, the actors like Janet Leigh. She was a top-billed actress. Anthony Perkins was in demand at that time. A lot of stage work. So both of these actors were pretty famous at the time and took a fraction of their salary, like 25% of what they normally would have taken. I think Janet Leigh was definitely a higher-paid actress. She would probably normally get like $100,000 per film, and she took a quarter of that for this, for Alfred Hitchcock. And basically, the studio still didn't want to pay. So he pretty much paid for it with his own money and just said to, you know, the studio, you just distribute it, you know, because that's what you need. You need a studio to kind of distribute your movie.
Right.
To get it out there. But he pretty much paid for this. And I think he just took, he didn't get a fee. He just, like, took a percentage of the negative or whatever, which ended up, you know, this is a huge movie. This became huge, it was re-released, like, 2-3 times in theaters, and it's always been a moneymaker. Every time it's come out on video, or they've cleaned it up or something, or it's on TV, you know, when it was first on TV, they cut it up a little bit.
Yeah, how can it not? I mean, you know,
but,
going right into Bates Motel, too, which he hasn't seen, you know, I think that's an excellent series if you haven't watched it. What's really good about Bates Motel is Freddie Highmore, who plays Norman Bates. His character... Ted is just awesome. I mean,
does he try to channel Norman a little bit or Perkins a bit?
Exactly. I mean, if you were to think of a
younger... Does he walk around eating candy corn?
No, but he's just as...
Freddie, you got to walk around and eat candy corn.
If you were to take Anthony Perkins as a young man, this is him. I mean, he's just... You got to see him just to know. I mean, he's got that psychotic look to his eyes. Mm-hmm. How infatuated he is with his mother in the show is just... Unbelievable character. I'd say just
how long do you think they can sustain it? I mean, until they get to the point where he has to offer at some point.
Well, like anything, they're veering off in the storyline and stuff like that because, you know, if they're going to go season after season because it is a popular show, right? You know? But just I'm throwing that out there just as him as Norman Bates is great. Even Vera, whatever the name of the mother he plays.
She's good too.
She's good too. Yeah, okay. And it's a good show on its own. I think.
Do they keep the same style of the house, or is that
different? Oh yeah, is no, the style. Okay. Yeah,
because that house still that exists. House, it's part of I think Universal Studios tour.
Right.
People go and see. I think out in California.
Yeah.
You know, it's still there. It still exists. I mean, and the thing is, you know. It just goes to show studio executives sometimes are afraid to put out some kind of a movie.
Yeah.
You know, we did Freaks a few weeks ago. No one wanted to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas it took Freaks a long time to kind of get popular, this right out the door, people loved this.
Yeah. And ever since, you know.
And it is. It's what, without this, you don't get a lot of what you like right now.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, you got to show some respect for what was. And come on, kids, just because a movie's in black and white don't mean it's bad.
No, so, of course not.
They did make a couple of sequels. They, I think, I don't know if he had anything to do with it, but they certainly waited until Alfred Hitchcock passed away. They made 3 sequels.
Yeah.
I've only seen Psycho 2, which I remember, and we'll talk about a little bit as we near the end. Psycho 2 actually isn't bad. It's actually not bad. I don't remember 3. I may have seen it, and I know I definitely didn't see 4. 4 was a made-for-cable movie. It was like on Showtime. It wasn't even like in a theater.
Yeah, I can't even remember.
And it kind of goes, kind of shows.
Truth, yeah,
it's got a little bit of Anthony. He directed it. He's got a little bit of Anthony Perkins, and it kind of like goes back with another actor playing him as a younger version, and you know you find out the backstory, kind of like what happens in Bates Motel.
Okay.
So there's that. Cool. But I remember, you know, if you like Psycho, Psycho 2 actually isn't bad. It's got a few of the same characters from the original. And it kind of goes in that direction again. And excuse me. And you actually feel a little bad for Norman in the second one, a little bit more than in the first one, because he's actually trying to be well in the second one. So, but this is the kind of movie where you could just leave it at the end of the first one, and it's just that last moment with him sticks with you.
And that's what the good about Bates Motel, too. I mean, you really feel sorry for the Norman Bates character. I mean, you really do. I mean, he's... He doesn't know what's going on. Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. And like I said, I don't think they focus in so much on what his mother has done to him, like, you know, the psycho and the Ed Gein and stuff like that. But on its own, I think it stands pretty good, and his character is really good.
Cool.
But anyways, the movie.
Right. That's the backstory. Now, the movie proper, which...
Exactly.
1960 takes place in Phoenix.
Yep.
Arizona, and they're nice to tell you it's a Friday.
It's a Friday.
And basically, we were introduced to our lead actress's name, Janet Leigh.
Yeah.
What's her name in this movie? Mary, right? Isn't it Mary?
I do believe so.
Mary, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I can't remember.
Janet Leigh's character.
And
that's another thing, too. It starts off, this is 1960, and... You know, it starts off with them in bed together, a single bed. She's in her bra, and you can tell that they have just finished up some monkey business.
Yeah, she's busty.
Yeah. You know. So that was pushing a little bit there as well.
Back then, they had the 50s, you know, those bras were like pointed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like torpedoes. Missiles or
yeah.
Like armor, you know.
It's just the style back then, you know.
Hammer and chisel to get it off. Come on, man.
No. And he's not married, she's not married. It's just, you know, I think he's like a traveling type salesman, and she met him in town.
He works at a hardware store, right?
Right, or maybe, for some reason, maybe he
later
has to
come
to Phoenix.
Later on, they show him.
That's right, that's right.
And, they're just
she'd love to get married, and,
you
know, he doesn't want to, because he can't really provide that much for her. So, you know, what, you're going to live in the back room of a hardware store or something like that.
I can give you nuts and bolts.
Yeah,
nuts pretty and much.
Bolts. I think that's what he just gave her, like, before the movie started. Nuts and bolts.
Exactly.
So she's got to get back to work on her lunch hour. You know, they're at, like, one of those seedy, you know, pay-by-the-hour motels, and she's got to get back to work. So she gets back to work. She works at a, like, a real estate office.
Right.
And
business transaction.
Right.
Right before she, when she walks in, you see, this is where you get, because Alfred Hitchcock is always makes an appearance in
right,
movies.
Right, right. It's he's not right very obvious, but it's there.
Yeah, he's right outside that door mm-hmm. with the hat on.
Yep.
And it looks like the same hat that the business guy comes in the next few seconds yeah, later with. Yeah. He could have handed it off to him and put it on his...
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock kind of does, he kind of started that, you know, Mel Brooks may always made an appearance in his films.
Right.
Peter Jackson almost always makes an appearance in his movies.
Yeah.
I think that all comes from Alfred Hitchcock. He kind of, you know, it started
that thing.
Yeah. Right. It was the kind of thing everybody looked for. I love the one in, really? Oh, is it The Birds? Where he's going to get on the bus and the door closes and he can't get on. He just turns and walks away. Oh,
I think so. Yeah.
It's either that one or remember. North by Northwest. I can't remember which one, but it's kind of funny. A little chuckle there. Yeah, she's a little late getting back, but then the boss comes in with a like a high roller Texas kind of guy, and he's buying a house for his daughter for her wedding gift, $40,000 cash.
And he comes right out and says,
just waving it around.
And he basically says, you know, I don't pay no taxes on this stuff. I'm skimming from the government, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah, because she says something, you know.
And he's flirting with her the whole time at the desk, you know, right. Hey, you know. You could come with me. You know, he's just flirting, just trying to get into her. And,
flapping that wad right in front of her face
like,
the whole
time. This is what you got coming to you if you come to me. Whatever.
So her boss kind of wants her to immediately take this as too much money to leave in the office over the weekend. It's a Friday afternoon. She already tells her boss, hey, I've got a headache. Can I get out of here after, you know, when this is done? He says, you know, go stop at the bank. Put that in the bank first. And, you know, because I don't want it in the office overnight.
Right.
So... Yeah, so then she leaves and goes to her apartment, and she's packing a suitcase. And we see on the bed the envelope with all that money in there. She never went to the bank.
You got to remember with, I'm sure most people know Alfred Hitchcock, all the cinematography, the camera angles and stuff like that are just really, really cool. There's a couple of really cool scenes in here.
Oh, and the most famous scene, the shower scene, which we'll get to later in this movie, it took a week to do that. Because of all the camera angles, different angles, different shots. A week of her being in the shower. And I mean, I don't think like 8 hours straight or anything, but a week to get that scene he wanted it.
Yeah, he's OCD, so, yeah.
That's the thing with some of these, you know, there's a handful of filmmakers out there that are true artists.
Right.
I've said Kubrick.
They got to get it just right to what they vision in their head.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know... Like, I know, like, what I've read about Kubrick, you know, it's there in his head, but he'll make you do it, you know, 180 times until he gets that one little nuance that he wants. And sometimes they don't know it till they see it, but, yeah, it's like they don't know much, but they know what they like.
That's
how the genius mind works in film, you know?
Exactly.
But then I would say, like, you know, there's Woody Allen, you know, but he just... Let's go. There's also a genius in that, too. Get what you want and go.
Exactly, everybody's got their own artistry,
Woody's genius is in his writing.
Exactly. There you go.
He's not the most, you know, out there director, but it's his writing.
That guy's been at the typewriter. Little typewriter.
I know, I watched that documentary about him, that old typewriter.
Forever.
They showed like a drawer he's got with just little scraps of paper with little ideas on them. He's like, when I don't know what to do, I'll just pull an idea out. You know,
can you imagine being at the typewriter for 8 hours a day almost your whole life? I mean, it just, something drives them. But anyways, Well, what happens is the character, she's got that money.
Right.
And she's loading up the suitcase and stuff. And her idea is to take off. Get out of here. I got $40,000.
And she's leaving town. She pulls to a red light. And her boss and that high roller are walking right by. And he looks and he sees her boss. Sees her. Yes. You know, sees her right in the face. And
he's like, I thought you had a headache. Yeah,
she's heading out of town.
Yeah, she's getting lost. And in the facial expression she's got, she's like, oh my God, I got caught.
It's not going to take them long to figure out, you know, something stinks in Denmark. And so she's on the road.
She's taking off.
Yeah, she's in her car. She's on the road. She gets pulled. She doesn't get pulled over. She falls asleep on the side of the road, pulls over and sleeps. And that gets a little creepy, that police officer.
Yeah,
but
she
totally acts guilty or suspicious of something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she can't hide what she's doing, like for sure.
Yeah, she has no poker face. She thinks she's, you know, paranoid that she's already being...
The cop pulls up, wakes her up in the car and asks her, you know, you know, is everything all right, basically? But, and she's like, you know, but then she starts acting nervous and everything else. And he's
like, as soon as she starts saying, you know, I'm in a hurry and you're wasting my time.
Yeah. Well, and he goes,
like, right there, they're going to keep you longer.
She goes, does it look like something's wrong with? And he goes, yeah, it actually does, because her facial, I mean, she looks nervous as heck, you know?
Yeah, so I guess I can't blame the officer for tailing her the rest of the way.
Right, because she's taking the car.
Yeah, she decides to ditch the car.
Yeah.
You know, exchange the car.
And she says, she picks one out, and she says, I'll take it.
Yeah, whatever, I'll take that one.
He goes, okay, I'll take the car and $700. She goes, okay, that's fine. He goes, wow, that was easy. Yeah,
the customer high-pressuring the salesman. I mean,
so everything is just like, she's guilty, man. Right. Something's going on with this woman.
Even the officer the officer kind of pulls up across the street from the dealership.
I like how she's staring at her. You know,
he's just standing there watching. He's got his hands
folded, staring at her.
I mean, the jig is up. He knows she's switching cars.
She shouldn't have even switched cars. She wasted like $800 right there or something. Or $700, but anyways.
Well, I think the idea is that she, you know, her boss is going to know she left town. When he comes in Monday and finds out that money wasn't there, he's going to know that she left with it.
Right.
Then everybody knows what kind of car she drives. At least, you know, when they call the police, they won't be looking for her car.
Right.
So she switches cars. That officer does pull into the dealership and kind of, he doesn't really get involved. I think he talks
to the dealer. They just show them all, like, walking their two steps as she pulls away, like, huh,
I mean, because she hasn't broken any laws, but she is acting very suspicious. Right. So she gets in that car, you know, drives away, and does the officer say anything to the salesman? I can't recall.
No, they just, like, basically walk up as she's driving away. They don't say a single thing. Like, just
right,
like,
so if they have a conversation, happens off-screen where we can't see. Yeah. So she's driving through the night.
Yeah, and it starts raining, and it's hard to see, and the vehicle's, you know, just she's getting tired, going down the road, and she...
And we get there, right?
Pulling off, you see the big Bates Motel sign right. There.
Such a cool scene. When you finally see that house up on the hill, and you don't see it right away, but when you do, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
Like, the house itself is a character.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I love the Bates Motel, the new series. I mean, I want to live in that house so bad.
But that takes place
in
modern time, right?
Right, it does, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so a little different in that respect.
Right, right.
Not that it really affects the story at all.
No, just a different spin.
Sometimes I just think as soon as you start introducing cell phones and stuff into things, it's harder to tell a story like this because, you know, all that technology is traceable.
Right.
You know, and you know, cars have GPSs in them now.
Well,
Bates
Motel is way before any of this really kind of happens, except for the father dying, but they put their own spin on that too.
They'd be able to find those cars like that, and stuff like that. So that's what I have. In this day and age, it's hard to kill people, guys.
Yeah.
Just ask him.
Yep. It's not easy. But anyway, she pulls up. She just gets the Bates Motel. She goes in the office, and she's nobody there.
Right. And she looks up at the house, and we see that view of the house. And you see what looks like a woman walk by the window. And you actually get a good look at her. Looks like a woman.
Looks like a woman.
So, that's going to be our introduction to Mother. So for all you people that watch Bates Motel and you've cheated and not watched Psycho, that's Mother.
And you'll hear her talking throughout
the
whole
movie. Great voice. And that same woman does the voice in at least the second and third one.
Okay.
Too, because you don't see Mother. You hear Mother, but you don't see Mother.
Well, you see her when he takes,
Oh, yeah.
But the voice, it's like you can hear. They make it sound like she can hear from down by the office all the way up the hill to the house.
Yeah, that part's a
little weird, but anyways,
I'm not really buying that part.
No, but adds to the effect of the movie,
But Norman must catch, we get introduced to Norman Bates. He comes out of the house, and he must have caught sight of her headlights.
Yes.
And headlights on the car. And he comes, running down to the...
just caught that.
Yeah.
Bazungas!
To the hotel, and she wants a room, so he pulls out the register, and I think
she gives a late alias, but
she calls herself Marcy Samuels.
Yeah.
Sam Loomis is the name of her boyfriend,
right?
Where do we remember him from, kids?
Sam
Dr. Loomis.
Oh,
Halloween.
Duh. Okay, duh.
Dr. Samuel Loomis.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah,
told you the guys that make the movies you like, they like these movies.
Exactly.
Told you that. So, that's where that comes from. And so she changes her first. I said a Mary. I think it's Marcy.
Right.
So yeah, he's being all kind of nice to her.
And his character right off the bat is just so...
It's perfect. It's childish. So good. Yeah.
So naive.
He's like the good boy, the Boy Scout.
Yeah.
And
gotta love it, you know.
Oh, you know what? I wanted to say something else. The music that plays at the beginning of the film, it's that real screeching violin. And it did remind me, I'm not a huge fan of the Jason franchise.
Okay.
But I think that's really reminiscent of, you know, like the Kill music when Jason's in the Kill song. Just those screeching violins.
Yes.
I think that, you know, someone paid a little tribute there for that. Mm-hmm. But it's got real distinctive music when you hear it. And I think the Friday the 13th films kind of, you know, paid tribute to that. I'm not going to say stole unless they paid tribute to
it. Oh, that's why McFarlane brought, you know, out the movie franchise, the movie Maniac figures.
Right,
which have got some of these here. I don't have Norman Bates out. I got him somewhere.
Yeah, he used to have him. I remember.
Well, his arm broke off easy. You know, McFarlane's earlier toys.
God, you remember when we used to chase after these figures?
Oh, my God.
I've, like, sold all mine. You know, I've got kids now, and I just don't have space for these things. He's got a whole room down here.
I switched it up again, so I got some Silent Screamers.
Yeah,
some
you and I, we classic. Used to chase after these things, and especially like the Star Wars Power of the Force figures. I mean,
there's some good.
I remember wasting like a whole Friday. Like, I'd get paid, and I would go from store to store to store to store. Spend my whole day after class, whatever.
Finding, you know, the college, figures. Because
looking
every,
for figures.
There'd be lines out the door to get to the right figures. People would go in, they would hide them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
I gotta tell a story, because this is great. I had a girlfriend at the time. You knew her. But when the Power of the Force, the Star Wars figures first came out, you know, the ones where it looked like Luke and Han were using a solo flex. They were all, you know, big and...
I remember.
There were a couple figures that were hard to find. One of them was like C-3PO. Like, you couldn't find him anywhere. And, you know, went to Toys R Us and they didn't have any. So I asked my girlfriend at the time, because she was with me. I was like, go find one of the guys working around here and ask him if they have one.
Right.
And so she did. She asked, you know, I'm looking for a figure. You don't have it. He came out with a whole box, opened it up, and said, which one do you need? And I just stepped right up. I need that one and that one. And like,
see, I remember you telling me about that.
Because they were just hiding them in back. I mean, like, they were creating scarcity. So, yeah, I remember, like, Lando was hard. There was always, like, that one that you couldn't find anywhere.
Guys would get jobs at Toys R Us over here where we live just so they had first dibs on the figures.
You used to live in the apartment right across from a Toys R Us. And he could see when the trucks were coming in. But I think I remember, like, Tuesdays or Wednesdays. That's, like, when they put the new ones out. And, yeah, you knew who knew.
Oh, yeah.
Who was there, because there's always a line before you go in. It was like people were either going for the match Hot Wheels cars or, you know, they were going for figures. And
yes, and it was usually the Star Wars were the big things back then.
Right.
But it was hard to find certain
Well, because that was like the dead period. That was like 94, 95, before the special editions came out.
Yeah.
And it was just like the dark period, and it's like, hey, there's new Star Wars stuff. Awesome. Then the special editions came out, and we started getting more figures, and...
Yeah, before you know it, we got 300 different Star Wars figures. Not to mention, Star Trek had just about as many anyways, too. Yeah. But anyways, we're veered off of this movie.
Right. Just getting on
but
the toys
anyways,
here.
But anyways,
I'm talking about toys.
Well, Norman gives her the room number one.
Number one, right next to the office.
Yeah, and that's for a reason, because he's got a parlor in the back, and that's where he's got his little peephole to where he... And it goes directly to the shower.
Right, Norman's a little bit of a pervert.
You know.
And, he offers to make her a sandwich.
Brings her back to the parlor. I mean,
but when he goes up to the house to make it, she can hear Mother.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It was plain as day.
Because he was
going
to have her come up to the house to eat. And
could
you know,
be that
heard...
sound traveling down to the...
So, yeah,
know,
she
house,
could, like, but... blatantly hear Mother talking in the house. And it's raining.
But she,
that part's
but...
a little bit of a stretch. But...
Yeah.
Because when he comes back, she's like, I'm afraid I got you in trouble. And
yeah,
because
Mother was up there... You know, reaming him out. You
know? And I gotta say, Anthony Perkins is just so great in this film. I mean, just and he was kind of typecast after this, but I mean, after such a great, I don't know. I mean, there's some actors that get kind of typecast. You know, like you figure like the guy that played Tony Soprano. I mean, you know, it's and even though he's passed away now, it's so hard to see him in anything else.
Well, exactly. That's what.
But
happens.
Even though I have,
I mean,
he's been good in other things.
Yeah.
But I think that's you know, when you have created at least one character that is so good.
I mean, Peter Griffith and Family Guy. He can't get, he can't get a job doing anything anymore. But that job, you know. So. I know what you mean.
Or, you know, like when David Duchovny did, you know, Fox Mulder. I mean, when you make a character that's so great and so believable, like Anthony Perkins does with Norman Bates, who, I don't know, I just think that it's a big compliment. Like, you know, you did this so well, you know, that we don't want to see you do anything else. But I know as an actor, you want to do other things.
Exactly.
But he's just, I can't imagine
but yeah, I mean,
anyone else doing this.
Oh, no.
I guess there's this young kid in the TV show now that's pretty good, but...
Yeah.
He's so good at playing that schoolboy kind of, you know, you know, a boy's best friend is his mother.
How he defends his mother in this movie too is just so, you know, I mean,
I love when they go into the parlor for her to have her meal. This is probably my favorite part of the movie, just the conversation that they have.
Right.
You know, because there's a little bit of back and forth. They start off kind of nice.
Yeah, she
makes a little comment that gets him a little agitated. She kind of brings it around to what she meant, and he's okay. And he admits a few things, you know, and I really love this scene. It's probably not a scene that a lot of people pick as their favorite, but this is my favorite part of the movie.
No, yeah, definitely. This is where it all goes down, and she actually...
She's almost motherly to him in some ways.
Yeah, she's kind to him. This is where she makes that decision, I think, to go back.
Right. After talking to Norman, she's decided this isn't worth it, you know, what I'm doing here. She's embezzling money from her company. And, God, we're both so nasally here. Sorry.
What are we going to do?
I was going to shoot up some Afrin before I came in, but I didn't.
Yeah, I'm stuffy as heck, man.
You use Afrin?
Oh, well. No, I don't.
Oh, man, it opens it all the way, man. Just
saline solution.
I use that, too, but, man, at night I got to sleep. I can't sleep like this.
No.
But yeah, he talks, you know, he's into taxidermy, you know, it sounds like he doesn't have much of a life, you know, he's just taking care of his mother, she's sick.
I like how he defends himself, like, you know, it's not that I don't got nothing else to do, this doesn't take up all of my time, you know.
Just what he does.
But it does, yeah.
And, you know, she mentions, you know, would it be easier to put your mother someplace, and that right there sets him off, you know. You know, have you seen those mental institutions? Put my mother there, and
he gets very
but she
kind of
brings it around that, you know, it just, you made it sound like she's being mean to you. I was just, you know, trying to help. I didn't mean to be hurtful,
right?
And you know, that kind of brings him back down, and you know, they're doing something that he doesn't do very often. It's having an adult conversation,
right, with another person, yeah.
Right? And she is being kind to him, and because of that, he's attracted. You know, he's certainly attracted to her. And because of this infatuation he has on his mother, that's not going to bode too well for her. So, yeah, she excuses herself after she eats, goes to her room, she's going to have a shower, and... She's
cleaning up.
Norman, he takes that, he's got a picture on the wall, takes it down, his wall's all chipped away, and then there's a little...
I always wondered how nobody ever... The first thing I look for in a hotel room is, hey, there's a hole in that wall, Somebody's looking at me from the other room, but...
I don't know.
Earlier on, when she does, she unpacks and everything, she does take the money out, wraps it in a newspaper, and put it on the sideboard.
Like on the side table.
Yeah, which comes in.
And then while she's talking to her, she does make the decision that she's got to get up early in the morning. She's going back to Phoenix. She's decided to, you know... I think the idea was to take this money, go to where her boyfriend Sam is, and kind of give them a start on a new life. They can go live on an island somewhere, like Elvis. And
like Elvis, yeah.
So
that's where he's at.
But so yeah, he goes back to the house after he kind of peeks on her a little bit, and we come upon the famous shower scene. Basically, I mean, there's not much else before that.
Yeah, I mean, she pretty much starts to write down all the numbers, you know.
And this was another
that
thing
I can, you know,
she's doing some figuring, you know, what
she spent the 700 plus the hotel,
right.
You know,
and she throws the scrap, she in the rips toilet. It up, throws it in the toilet. This was something that they had a bad time with in the movie, because they had never shown someone using a toilet and flushing a toilet in a movie before. And they had issues with that. They had issues with just a toilet. You know, like it was, you know, oh, a toilet that's offensive or whatever.
So prude back then.
It's just different
time.
Just
a toilet.
Again, you know, movies weren't as, I don't know, it was just a bigger deal. Like when a movie came out, it was a big deal.
You could tell it was a real old toilet too. I mean, scuff marks.
Like when the idea when movies were traveling shows, like, you know, like a maybe not Psycho, but like something like, you know, Fantasia, or it's a mad world. It would go from town to town. Oh, it was a big deal. You know, you bought tickets in advance. You got dressed up. It was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just different than it is now. They're trying to, I think, with buying tickets and having assigned seating and crap like that. But, the famous shower scene.
Yes.
It's been copied in all your favorite TV shows and cartoons. And
I've even done it in my shower.
Right. You know, this is how he got rid of his first wife. But
Anyways, yeah, and
don't pay attention to that last comment.
She's showering and stuff, and of course you see Norman, and you know. Well, it's not Norman. It's got the wig. He's dressed like his mother. And, whatever. And it comes off. Mother comes down.
With a big old butcher knife, and even the sound.
That sound.
Which
is
I think
great.
They used like a melon. They took a knife and recorded sounds of the knife going into a melon.
Yes, you can hear it definitely
and,
going in. It
stabbed several times. You don't see her nude or anything.
No.
But they. It's a lot of edits.
You could tell how took that long to actually do that shower
and,
scene.
You know, I mean, you figure they probably had, I think I got like six different, you know, scenes there. So they probably had cameras all over the place filming the whole thing. And then, you know, what do you use to make it the most dramatic? And
Because that knife is coming down in so many different spots and stuff like that.
And, you know, you see a hand like scratching on the, you know, tiles a little bit, hand grabbing
the shower,
curtain, pulling it all down.
And then her head flops out of the ground.
And then you see the drain, the blood going down the drain.
And wasn't it like chocolate syrup or something?
Which is another reason why they chose to do black and white, using actual blood, you know, making it look real, like real red blood would have been a little bit hard at that time to...
Just chocolate syrup
to get approved
the blood,
to release. So yeah, the little chocolate syrup looked nice and dark like blood swirling down the drain. And then I love the last scene. Her face is just on the tile.
Yeah, how it hit on the tile.
Yeah, like outside the tub laying on
the
tile.
The camera comes from the eyeball.
Yep.
Out, showing her head.
And it just pans all the way to like where the newspaper with the money is. You know, just to remind you of that. And then away again. And then we're going to have the house. Like the doors open or the window, whatever there, and then the house. Just one movement of the camera through there. And just so awesome. We see Norman coming running.
Comes running down,
His reaction when he comes in there is that his mother did this, and he's going to do what a good son does.
Oh, yeah, he's upset.
And
he's like scared. He's holding his face. He's going, oh, my God.
Mother, no. Yeah, you know, like she's done this before, you know, and he's got to clean it up again. Yes. Which he does. He you know... mops up all the blood, cleans everything up.
Yep.
Now, you know, these days you'd have to use some ammonia, so even if they got samples, they couldn't use any of it.
Oh, yeah. And if they went back there 50 years later, they'd still probably find some blood.
Right.
You know.
Again, you know, soap and water ain't going to wash it away these days.
Whatever that stuff is called.
Use ammonia.
Ammonia.
That's what he told me. And, yeah, he takes her car, backs it up, wraps her up.
Till this day. Okay.
Yeah, gets her all her belongings.
Puts it all in the trunk.
Including, I believe, the newspaper that has the
$40,000. He takes it, throws it in the trunk. If he only knew.
Yep. And
That really got me in this movie, man. I'm like,
man, $40,000. Didn't that paper feel kind of thick when you picked it up?
Yeah, wouldn't you have at least...
who would have thought?
I know.
I mean, when you're disposing of a dead body, you're not thinking about, you know, opening up the paper and looking at the sports page. But he gets everything pretty much, you know, spit spot, and gets her body in the trunk, gets her belongings
takes
in the trunk.
Takes it to the swamp.
Which I always thought was like a tar pit. It's like a tar pit, I think, right? That's how I always thought it.
They call it a swamp at the end of the movie. Yeah.
It looks like a tar pit to me.
It looks like, tar pit, quicksand.
Where are
type
the La Brea
area?
Tar pits at? Are those in California?
I think so. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
And
so
he pushes the, and I do love that part.
Yeah.
He pushes the car in, and it doesn't go all the way at first.
It stops. Where the head, you know, top of the car,
the hood.
And then
it
looks
down.
Yeah, then it starts
and eventually
going
you hear
the
gurgling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, pardon me. Then I think after that, and see, now that's another thing about this film, too. That's pretty much concludes the first act of the film. Janet Leigh was a huge star.
Yeah.
You kill her off in, you know, the first, you know, before the first hour of this movie is almost 2 hours, and you kill her off before the first hour of the movie, and she's gone. You know, there aren't any more big stars in the movie, really, after this. So, you know, that was another thing, too. And So then we, I think the next scene starts with, you see some woman writing a letter.
Right.
To Mary. I think I was saying Mary. It's Marion that Janet Leigh's right. character was. And it's her sister, who's now, it's been like a week. No one has heard from her. And her sister's kind of like on the hunt for, and I can't remember her sister's name now.
I don't know.
Doesn't yeah. matter. But Marion's sister.
But
yeah, I've seen this movie like a half a dozen times. I can't remember her name.
We've got colds, so our minds aren't particularly sharp tonight. But anyways,
cold medicine makes things neat.
Yeah.
But
anyways, all these people are trying to get her back too. Even the boss is saying, "Try to find her, get her back."
They went to her private eye. She's not there. They got a private eye looking for her. He's following the sister.
Yeah.
Well,
he goes to the hardware store where
right. she comes her in boyfriend first.
And the sister, and he spots them both together.
Right. She comes in first, asks yeah. for Sam, starts saying, you know, what's going on, where is she, and
she even asks him
if you're mixed up in
right,
this.
Let me
no
know.
No clue what's going on. He has no idea. I don't know if she believes him at first.
Right.
But, you know, she even says, you know, like her boss is just, they just want the money back. You know, she's not in trouble. Just give the money back.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, right. And then,
please,
you know, you
bring the money back.
You see this shady guy in a hat looking through the window, and this is a guy named Arbogast.
Yeah, Arbogast.
Weird name, but you can't forget that one. And he's a private eye, and he just pops in, and he starts asking the questions. Where is she at? Oh, I mean, he knows, just like, I know she's not here, but
he's,
you know,
a straight shooter.
Yeah, asking a lot of questions, trying to find things out. You know, because they figure, you know, he's probably got her hid somewhere. $40,000, a lot of money. So, you know, he convinces them, I think, that, you know, Sam Loomis convinces them he doesn't know what's going on. So
he says he'll start. I think he says he starts kind of believing him. He says he's
right.
going to start scouring the city.
Right, you know, kind of he hits up all the hotels.
Says she's probably here. If her boyfriend's here, she's probably here.
Right.
So hits all the hotels.
So he's hitting all the hotels. And
gets to Bates.
Works his way to Bates. And Bates, you know, he even makes a comment that, you know, I almost passed the place up. You know, well, Norman doesn't have the light on.
Right.
And I think a lot of times that's because he just wants to keep people away.
Yeah.
And
he says, oh, yeah, I'm so used to
that. This is
an
awesome part here, too.
This is their conversation together.
Oh, his back and forth with this guy is...
Because he's nonstop. He's digging at him with a knife, man.
Right.
Picking at him.
Norman's starting to crack a little bit.
Yeah, he can't hold it together.
You know, because the first thing he said, you know, Norman will say, you know, no, there hasn't been anybody here in a couple
yeah.
of weeks. And
yeah.
then he slips and says somebody, you know, was here a few days ago.
Couple was here.
You know, they made notice that I didn't even have the lights on the sign. And the guy's like, oh, well, wait, you said it's been a couple of weeks. You know, and now you say, you know, a couple days ago
yeah.
somebody's here. And, you know, look at the picture again. He's got the picture of her and he's looking.
Oh, okay,
like,
yeah,
I remember her.
It was raining, her hair was down, and, you know.
Right.
So.
She came in, she got a room.
And he's just going, oh, yeah.
You know, then
okay.
they find out, then he digs a little bit more, finds out, you know, they had a meal together in the back room there and talked to her. And,
yeah, I mean, you know, at first he didn't know her, and now he's giving up information that they ate food.
Right.
They did, you know, so yeah.
He asks to check the register, and he's like, oh, I don't even, you know, let people sign that anymore. He's like, well.
And I like how he's, like, chewing while he's looking down over to. You know.
Yeah, and he sees the name, the Marcy Samuels. And, just, you know, like,
and the detective
Sam,
says, yeah, Sam.
Sam, that's her boyfriend's name, Marcy, yeah. close enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's catching, he definitely doesn't trust Norman. You know, I think he even makes mention of his mother.
Right.
And he's like, oh, well, can I talk to her? You know, I mean, she might have, you know, some little detail. You know how these, you know, cop types
yeah.
think. Even, he's not a police officer, he's a private eye, but that's her job, to ask questions,
oh,
those
yeah.
probing questions. And You ask them fast like that, you're going to get somebody to trip up, and
exactly.
Norman trips up. So he kind of just wants the guy to leave.
And he wanted to go up there, and he said, well, you know, no, I think you should leave now, you know. He,
right.
So that's when he ends up, you know, saying, okay, basically I'll be back, you know.
Right, he goes to make a phone call.
Yeah.
Basically saying that, you know, he's calling the sister. You know, I believe you. You know, I don't think you know Loomis had anything
to
do with
her.
This.
He found her. She's at Bates Motel.
Right. He's going to start suspecting Norman. You know, Norman sounds a little cagey.
Yeah.
The way that he's, you know, backing up on his story
he's
here,
bumbling around.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, he says to Norman, you know, I guess if I want to get up in the house talk to your mother, I'm going to need a warrant, right? and or check these rooms.
Right.
You know, because I think he watches Norman because he was about to change the linens, and he wanted, you know, the guy even says, you know, can I go check these rooms?
Right.
He's like, sure. And he goes up to the door one, right, where she was, doesn't quite touch the handle, goes to the next one.
Yeah, so.
That tells him right there, you know, something's in that room.
Yep.
So he calls, when he's on the phone, the sister says, I'll see you in about an hour, hour and a half. You know, I'll drive back out there and, right, you know, work on getting a warrant and find out what's going on.
3 hours later. But in the meantime, yeah.
But then he kind of hangs back a little bit and decides, you know, he's going to get up to the, is Norman in the office or?
He checked the office. He wasn't in there.
Right. So he decides he's going to go up to the house.
I think when he pulled up, you seen Norman shoot off to one of the other rooms. So okay. I don't know what he was doing, but yeah, he Arbogast
goes the house.
Up to the house.
He's going to try to, you know, opens question the door, look around. Goes up.
Yeah.
And he starts going up the steps.
This is a great, yes, classic scene.
Oh, God, yeah. That, I mean, if you're not expecting it, I've seen this before, so I know when the jumps are going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, this is where these movies got this stuff from. Oh. That, you know, right out of nowhere, someone coming with a knife.
Well, there's just the camera scene. I mean,
oh, the great camera.
He starts, he's looking around and stuff, and he sees the staircase. You know, Bob's going to be upstairs. So
right.
He starts walking up the staircase, and the effects that they use, as he's walking up the staircase, it looks like everything in the background is blurred and, like, focused in.
Yeah, it's a cool way of, I think, you know, using a special type lens where you stay focused on the one guy and then the other guy, you know, what's in the background, you know, gets unfocused.
Yeah.
There's a different, you'll see that in a lot of movies.
Very weird and odd.
A lot of movies, there'll be someone in the foreground and what's in the background is unfocused, and then you'll see, like, when the focus goes on that person,
yeah,
it switches. What's in the foreground gets blurry. But then you see
the door's opening really slow as he's walking up the step,
yep,
from Mom's
so
room.
Awesome.
And
Mother.
Yeah, so when he hits the top of the step, Mother comes plowing out,
mm-hmm,
and just butcher knife starts him, hacking at him.
And just the fall back is awesome.
Awesome scene too, yeah. It's all that blurriness.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's actually kind of like walking down the steps, because that's what it looks like towards the end, like he's backpedaling down the steps.
Yeah, very
but
weird.
But it looks
scene.
Like it's like a, you know, what do they call it? Like a, almost like a steady cam. I don't know if they had steady cams in, like where you wear the little camera
right,
on
like
you.
Right, like it's right with him.
And just to get, you know,
yeah,
and that effect when he's going backwards.
I think he had the same effect in Vertigo when Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, Vertigo had
some
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So same kind of camera stuff going on there.
All right, there's, I mean, but Hitchcock made tons of movies. I, you know, definitely you got to see Psycho.
Some of this earlier stuff is really good too.
Yeah,
Stranger.
Strangers on a Train.
Strangers on a Train. Awesome movie.
That's the one
More film noirish, but
yeah,
definite. Well, suspense.
Shadow of a Doubt, which is also a little bit about a serial killer as well.
Yes.
A lot of people like The Birds. You know, it doesn't have like a resolution to it. To kind of, you never really know exactly why the birds are doing what the birds are doing.
Yeah.
North by Northwest is an awesome mistaken identity movie.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of just ends abruptly, unfortunately, but a lot of movies back then did.
Yeah.
And what else is a great movie? Vertigo, Rear Window.
Rear Window, I love that movie. I love the effects. Jimmy Stewart's just up in his apartment the whole movie.
Right.
Looking
watching
through
his neighbors,
telescope. Because
he's got a busted leg.
Yeah, and the telescope goes to this apartment complex
where he thinks he sees a man murder his wife.
Right, but and he sees everybody's lives going on. They're just off,
right,
which was meant to be. Like Alfred Hitchcock, just his vision with all the, you know, the way he shows the life of everybody,
right,
in those apartments. Just
when you have no life and you're just watching everybody else's.
And I love how he shows up just walking by the
right,
alley in the one scene. But anyways, yeah, that's another movie to watch too. Awesome
movie.
I'd
say those right there are the best ones.
Yes.
The ones that we just rattled off there. Those are my favorites. But, you know, he's got tons of other movies. And there's several, like, box sets of DVDs and Blu-rays you could check out. But
yeah,
he's a filmmaker that usually delivers. I mean, he's got duds, too. I think all our favorite filmmakers do. But
exactly.
You know.
But what happens, well, we'll get back. I'm sorry,
right,
I'm rushing it.
So we're back at the hardware store.
Well, he takes care of the
body again.
Private
yeah,
eye
yeah,
puts
yeah,
it in a car.
Another car in the swamp.
Yeah, so he takes that to the swamp again. So that, you know,
right,
he gets rid of all of his stuff over in the swamp, which is very convenient. Wish I had something like this way in the back of
my
house.
Yeah, I wish I had like a tar pit or something.
You know, to get rid of things that don't need anymore. And anyways, yeah, they do go back to the...
we're ugly some bitches.
We are stuffy and codes. I can't believe we're doing this. We didn't want to skip a day.
Nope.
We wanted to get this up.
Holidays, so, anything. We're doing it.
As long as we're not throwing up. We could do that too,
though. I'll do it too.
We can do, what's a gory movie we could do? We could watch Dead Alive and we can start throwing up. This was one of our best
movies. That's when you do The Exorcist.
Or that, yeah.
I hate puking in movies.
Oh my God, yes, I do too. I hate it. I hate it in real life. What are you talking about?
But yeah, they're at the hardware store and the dude's late. Arbogast is late. It's been 3 hours. He sent me back in an hour or less. And
she's convincing Sam. She's like, you know, come on, man.
We got to go check. She's really impatient. Wants to know what's going on with her sister.
Yeah.
And so they decide to go and visit the sheriff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sheriff knows.
Sheriff's like, what do you mean? Norman Bates, the Bates Motel.
Right. He's like, Norman, he's harmless. And
yeah, he's a mother.
Yeah, because they mentioned his mother.
Yeah, his mother's there, and the private eye was trying to, you know, investigate and talk
to her. And that's when they revealed that his mother died 10 years ago, supposedly from, she hooked up with some other guy after her husband died, and she and Norman had been together for so long. I don't know if this has happened in the TV show yet or not.
No, she's alive. She's a big part of the series, so she ain't gonna die for a while.
I think it was they made it up to be like a murder-suicide kind of thing, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, arsenic or whatever. And
arsenic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't mess with arsenic.
No, arsenic. No, it was strychnine.
Strychnine. Yes, don't mess with that either.
We got to get the right poison.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah, I got to borrow some from you before I leave.
Yeah, I got a little bit left in one vial on the
I'll pay you. I'll spot you for the bottle.
I love that cabinet that I got. But anyways.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, the sheriff's not having any of it.
Uh-huh.
And
he's not buying it. He's not getting out of bed for this. He's not getting
dressed.
He's like,
I'll go talk to him.
I'll go talk to him in the morning.
Yeah,
you know. But you know, they decide that
they do call him,
right?
And the sheriff goes. He says, yeah, she was there. She left. You know, basically making it sound very simple and everything's okay. And the private eye stopped by, questioned him, left too, and stuff like that. So. You know, no reason for the sheriff to think anything's going on.
Right. Because, I mean, even like the boyfriend's first response was, you know, did you call the hospitals and stuff like that?
Right.
What, you know, the sister and you know, Sam Loomis think and what the private eye thought is that, you know, Norman's the one that offed her and stole that $40,000.
Yeah.
You know, maybe to open up another hotel or something like that. So
that's what the sheriff's basically saying, ain't he?
Right. Well, I don't think he's not buying that. Because he knows Norman. He's not buying that. That's what everyone else thinks. That's what the private eye, the sister, and Sam Loomis think.
Right.
So when the sheriff's not going to do anything, they decide to go up there and check it out for themselves. And they're going to go up there.
Yeah, and she's basically on a mission, her sister. Right, I wish I knew her name. Man. But anyways, her and Sam.
I just watched it today.
They do go up there. They register. They get a room, and you know,
right.
He's going. We don't got no luggage, and he goes. He's not having them sign in.
Right.
He's
not all doing the things anything. That usually happen at a hotel.
And Sam is questioning him like, shouldn't we sign in? I want a receipt.
He's like, no, it's
you know, my company pays for this.
Right. And he wanted a receipt because he wants to look at the register.
Right.
He wants to see.
They're trying to get as much information as they can.
Because also the private eye had a sample of Marion's handwriting. And so, he recognized it looking at that. So, yeah, he wants, and then he has to pay up front for the luggage. And I guess if you didn't have luggage, you had to pay up front. And they said, you know.
Yeah, because they might just come in and do their little ditties, you know. And I happened even back then, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then, hey, let's take off.
Yeah, take off and not pay.
You got to get your money up front.
I don't know what difference it made if you had luggage, though.
Yeah, I bet you were going to stay, just had I guess. But
you know, you might have some luggage for your, you know, your toys. Your cuffs and stuffs.
Yeah, your bondage material. Anyways,
yeah, I need my cuffs back, by the way.
Oh, jeez.
Your
gag ball.
Yeah, and my butt plug too.
Oh no! I haven't used that in a while. Gives me hemorrhoids.
Hope you cleaned it.
Oh, jeez.
It's great for hemorrhoids.
Oh my God.
Loosens them up a little bit.
Anyways, what the heck are we talking about? We're hallucinating now. This guy right here. is going, what are you talking about? Hemorrhoids.
Say the secret word. Win $100.
Where are you from, Wisconsin? Up there. You're from Wisconsin, are you?
Dead grouch.
Oh, I can't even do a grouch. Can't do a groucho voice today. I'm too stuffy. But anyways, they see the
great scene. The sister, you know, she decides that they're gonna. She's gonna kind of investigate a little.
Spit
bit.
Spit it out.
She's going to kind of investigate a little bit.
She's a private eye, right?
She's not a private
eye. She did go to school for that.
No, it's not mentioned in the movie.
Oh.
And
I read the novel of behind the scenes for a psycho.
Yeah. I read the novel by the fictional story.
And Alfred Hitchcock said he got her because she was going to school for private.
I'm not buying that for a second.
Okay, so that her
private
happen.
Eye skills are horrible. So,
but anyways, yeah.
Yeah, so what do? They talk to the sheriff again?
They talk to her at the church. And he's like, I've already stopped there because they asked, are you going to be going up there and stuff like that? And So that's that.
Right, they're just going to go back up to the hotel, try to dig for a little bit more information.
Yeah.
You know, they got their room. So, they get their room. Is this the whole part we were talking about? Yeah. When the sheriff's not going to go up there,
yeah,
or he says he's already talked to him, they decide, I kind of said it backwards.
Yeah.
They decide they're going to go up
Flip-flop. There.
Flip-flop. And so this is what he was saying, he wants the receipt, because he wants to see the register to see if her name's in there.
Right.
They get to the room.
They give her a room.
He gives them one way in the back, like number 10 in the back.
So nowhere near number one.
And she wants to kind of get up in that house and see if she can talk to Mother.
Yeah,
and find
he keeps Norman busy. Sam keeps Norman busy
right.
in the parlor. He even goes up to him.
It's like, you know,
so she can get into room number one too to look around.
Right,
so she's,
right.
Or no, they both do. They both scavenge in there.
They scavenge in room one, and that's where they find just the only clue they find is that scrap of paper where she wrote some figures on.
Yes.
That was in the toilet.
I don't know how she got it from just that little piece, but she says it looks like.
It's taken from 40,000. I guess it's 40,000 right. and another figure.
But she really ripped it up, so it had
it wasn't just a very big piece. But
it could have been a phone number.
No,
306.
Yeah, I know.
But I get it.
No shower curtain yet on the shower. No really other clues in there.
Just the toilet, which reminds me to go to bathroom.
So she wants
when
to get up
here.
Oh, jeez. So she wants to get up to the house. And he decides to.
So you
got to
watch our
busy.
Podcasts all the way through because sometimes we go off on some crazy tangents. If you know what I mean. Nevertheless.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh.
So, I know we've been talking to some people, and I know they do like some shorter ones. I can't. God. I couldn't do a shorter one.
No, we can't get all this in 7 minutes.
I can't.
Minutes,
I just
9 minutes.
Like, I wish people would just hire us to do, DVD commentaries for all the movies.
There you go.
I mean, because that's kind of like what I feel like we do.
I have been in talks with Steven Spielberg, wasn't it? Who got a hold of me last
week? Yeah, he wanted us to do one for Amistad and Schindler's List, kind of doing it in our style. And I don't know why he backed out. I think he watched one of our episodes.
What the heck did I laugh for? I remember a joke that Mr. Steven told me.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good one.
Yeah, I know.
But
he thinks he can tell the Jewish jokes because
he's a funny
Jewish.
Guy. Yeah.
But
unbelievable. Schwitschka. Yeah. I forget what it said. But yeah, we might have something in the works there.
It's in the hopper.
So
me doing commentaries for all the classic religious films, Ben-Hur,
I got
Passion
a good,
of the Christ.
Yeah, because I do got a good Chuck Heston impression. We talked a while back there before he passed on. But
right.
Anyways.
Jack Palance. You can do it with the little quiver at the end of everything he says.
Jack,
you are my number one guy.
Jack Palance.
Jack.
Anyways. Okay, we're back to Psycho. She's let's see. So
she's creeping on a come up to the house.
Yes, Sam is keeping Norman busy.
Yeah,
now,
he's really going off on him too. Like,
he basically pushes him in the hall.
Starting to fight with him. Frankly, talking about where's the $40,000? Where's that dough?
We know you're doing it.
Say, where's that dough, Robert?
And she's working her way out.
Where's that dough, say?
You can't fool me.
Gene.
On a rapid flip tangent.
But yeah, that's kind of what he does. He's talking to him a little bit, and he's, yeah, so I hear you want to get a new hotel. Yeah, what, how much do you think it's going to cost you? About $40,000. Yeah, I mean, he's being a jerk. I mean, if you're going to get some information from him, you got to be nice.
Ted, you know when I start laughing, sometimes I can never stop.
I'm trying to get us back on target. Stay on target.
Okay, so okay, now I'm back.
All right.
Oh, my Lord. I love laughing like that, man, where you just can't stop laughing. But yeah, he's grilling him, man. He's telling him, yeah, don't. I think you want to buy the, you know, buy the hotel and stuff like that.
Right,
but,
buy another hotel.
But he goes. I think he picks up on that. He's doing this because so she can get up to the
house. Right.
And that's when he runs out and shoots up after her.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because he even mentions, you know, when he says something about his mother, and he's like, where's that lady friend of yours?
Yeah.
You know, and then he realizes
she's up in the house, though, and she yeah, does go into
the...
she's
around. It's she goes nice in the house.
Yeah.
There's some beautiful rooms in this home.
She's into it. Well, in Bates Motel, it's actually looks like it's from, you know, how it's, like, newer here.
Yeah.
Bates Motel, it's older.
Okay.
And it's, like, run down, like, where, you know, everything needs to be repaired and stuff like that, okay. So...
yeah, she like goes into mother's room, and just like with Ed Gein, it's all pristine.
And I love...
closet full because of dresses. Because
earlier... he took mother down to the fruit cellar.
Right. We skipped over that. He took, and she's talking or whatever, and he's carrying.
She's saying, you're not putting me down there again in that dusty room.
Right, he's going to put her down in the fruit cellar. I don't, you know, and he to goes, punish her.
Yeah, and he does and it anyways. Yeah,
the bed, you know, it's still got like her body indentation in it.
Yeah, like, looks like it's 10. It must be a nice soft down bed because, man, it's like 10 inches deep.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I guess that's where you end up laying every night, you know, in this spot.
Yeah, it goes, but...
and then, yeah, she works her way downstairs and sees Norman coming up. And or I think she even goes into Norman's room. Like, yeah. It looks, yeah. And his room's it's nothing special. It's like an
just
old...
just like a kid's room still.
Yeah, yeah. Like
you can tell that's where he lays, too, because the bed...
bed's messed up and...
it's got to... yeah, and he's sitting like he's records. Still like a few... yeah, like he's a little child yet, you know? Mm-hmm. But I
little
think
little tin toys and stuff like that.
Yeah. And pacifiers and diapers. Some have already been changed and they're still sitting there and not even it's thrown not away.
In there. Deleted scenes.
Yeah.
What's that book she picks up and looks at? They don't show you what's in it.
It's I think it's called The Hobbit.
No, it wasn't The Hobbit. But she picks up a book and she looks at it and she almost gets like a surprised look on her face.
And she goes,
and then she, you know, and
she goes like
this.
She goes,
well, it cuts back to Sam and Norman and. Yeah, I mean, you could tell Norman's just getting a tick going. He's tapping his finger on the table and, you know, eating his candy corn. And
he's
you know, I think you should just
jaw's
take your,
going and he's pissed.
I think you should just take your girlfriend and leave, you know, or whatever, wife, whatever. Yeah. And, yeah, so that's where he's going to say, hey, where's that lady friend here?
Oh, yeah, and that's when he basically tries to leave. The boyfriend stops him and he picks up this jar of something and...
right, they struggle.
Smacks it over his head.
Smacks it over Sam's head because he tries to keep him away from the house.
Oh, he deserved it after
prying. She's coming down the stairs.
That bad, man.
Sees him coming up the steps from outside.
And she runs out to
the steps. And that's where like the cellar is. The cellar steps back there.
The fruit cellar.
Right. And we're getting towards
the
end, kids. This is where it's all going to come together.
That's where Norman Bates does all his taxidermy stuffing and the show, the Bates Motel.
Okay. Oh, makes sense. Makes sense. So he immediately dashes upstairs, and she continues to go downstairs and gets down the cellar, and there's the rocking chair, and you can see from behind Mother sitting in there.
You think she's there.
And she sees it and says, you know, Mrs. Bates, and touches her on the shoulder, and it's a nice, cool, slow-mo kind of turn. The chair turns, and we see nothing but a decayed corpse wearing a dress and a wig.
Yes.
And that is Mother. And then
and they go, it's very scary.
She screams. And, next thing you know, Norman's coming down there in a dress, wig, and a knife.
I like how he ran up to the room and got dressed in the dress and the wig and, you know, as Mother, because that's basically who he is in his psyche, and comes running down. And I love when he breaks through that door and he's just...
He's got all... He just looks so eerie in that dress. Yeah,
crazed.
Transvestite.
He's not a transvestite.
No, I know. I'm just throwing that out there.
But, yeah,
I
like Sam to say the word transvestite. And, you know,
kind of because I drive the boulevard every night, and there's tons of them. Just transvestites looking for a score. But anyways, whatever that was. And, yeah, so Sam, can't even see, I got too many toys up here.
I know, anyways, my Rob Lowe.
Sam,
Lost Boys.
Rob Lowe, please don't lift up your shirt.
Well, not now, anyway.
And,
so yeah, Sam struggles him to the ground, it kind of fades off, you see the wig on the ground, nice final shot there, another shot of Mother, and it's a really cool decayed kind of corpse thing. It's, they didn't skimp, it's... You know, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's all, we're all, our senses are all deadened and we're all, you know, conditioned to violence and stuff like that. But it wasn't like that back then. So, I mean, this was a bigger deal.
Definitely.
But it's still, you know, Alfred Hitchcock knew how to set up some suspense. He knew how to, you know, this has been done to death. So everybody knows kind of like Norman was the killer and dressing up and the mother and all that. But people didn't know that when they saw this. And this was, you know, a man wearing a dress and killing people and stuff like this, you know.
So the very ending of the movie, they actually have some guy come out and basically...
psychologist.
Basically explain all of this.
And yeah, they say, because all the cops are saying, he wouldn't tell me anything, he wouldn't tell me anything. And he says, well, you know, he didn't tell me anything, but his mother told me everything.
Yes.
And, you know, he starts to... really kind of lay it out for, you know, it's a nice little denouement to the movie, explaining, you know,
because they said the one
psychosis.
Guy, right, the one guy says he's a transvestite, and he goes, no,
right,
she's not a trans, he's
yeah, because he doesn't do it for any kind of sexual reason,
right?
They explain that, you know, he's Norman's the one that killed his mother,
right?
She was very domineering and, you know, told him that all other women are bad, and so every time he, you know, the guilt that he felt for killing his mother, every time, you know, he would become attracted to another woman, the mother part would take over and he'd kill the mother, and he even did the voice of her, you know, would hold conversations, and
he thought he was his mother.
Just a complete split personality that developed into this psychosis of his. So, you know, that's kind of how it all gets explained, but I really love the last, second to last scene of the film. When you see Norman, you know, I love...
They give him a blanket.
Yeah, because the cop says, you know, he says he's got a chill. Can I give him a blanket? And he says, yeah. And when they show the officer go into the room, hand the blanket, and it's a woman's voice you hear that says, you know, thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just sitting there, and he slowly gets that smile. Because they're all talking. You hear, like, the voice over, you know, over the image say, you know, he's insane and all that. And they even superimpose, briefly, although very briefly, they superimpose Mother's corpse smile over his smile, and it just for a second, like, if you're not really watching, you miss it.
I love her explanation about it all too, you know, how, you know, it wasn't her, but she's basically saying it was him, and you know, saying I wasn't gonna let him
blame me for all those murders,
right? And you did this, you're a bad boy, you killed all these, you know. So she you know, basically blaming him still. Right. I mean, she just... And what a mean mother. My God.
Yeah, and then the very last scene is them pulling
I'd say that's
Marion's
what,
car out of the tar pit.
Yeah, that ends the movie.
That's
there.
The end.
Yeah.
The sequel, I mean...
And that is pretty cool, too. I mean Alfred Hitchcock, man. He knows how to tell a story, that's for sure.
Part two is kind of cool in that...
Well, I was going to say, though, in the Bates Motel series...
Oh, yeah, okay. Let's tie that in.
It's actually the opposite. Where this is Mother's mean and overbearing and thing. The mother in Bates Motel series that's on is, she's, I guess she's overbearing with him, but she's not evil, and she does nothing. She's protective of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, you know, Ed Gein, this in a way, you know.
Does she tell him, like, all the other women are bad?
No,
not yet.
There's been a couple instances of that, but for the most part, she allows him to have boyfriends.
Boyfriends?
Actually, girlfriends.
Say what?
My cold medicine kicking in.
What you talking about, Willis?
But anyways, she allows him to have girlfriends and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
Unexpected. That's what I'm saying. She wants him to be normal and have a normal... Whereas he's kind of flipping... It's the same kind of dilemma he's got in his mind with where he's his mother. He has these blackouts.
Yeah,
and he's basically he's killed women. Okay,
so in the his, show he's already in the done show. It?
Yeah, he has done this, and I don't want to give too much away. But
so it's like he's already kind of like. She's trying to...
Right.
Okay.
She's all trying right. to actually save him and make him a better person, huh. not have him go not through sure this if I and like stuff. That. It's an interesting, different take. That's all I'll say. I mean, it's...
Because in the film, you definitely get it's the mother that kind of did this to him.
Right.
Whereas in the show, it sounds like he was kind of already going down that path and she's trying to save him and...
Right.
Okay, well, that's interesting in a way,
but
I guess.
But she caters to it, too, though, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you ever watch it, you can get your take on it.
Maybe. I know it's very popular.
Yeah, it is a different take.
I think
on
I've
it, but...
gone on record that I don't watch any shows.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I am going to go home and watch the very last Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
There you go.
Will be, because yeah. I'm a huge fan of that.
Scooby-Roo!
The only thing I can say about the sequels, I don't remember 3 and 4 well enough to talk about, but I do
Me
know
neither.
In the second one, the sister character is in it. Like, Norman's about to be released. It's been, you know, like, whatever, 20 years yeah. or whatever. And the same actress is in it. Not just the same character, but the same actress.
Okay.
Who's fighting to keep him locked up.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Someone else from this film is in it, too. I can't recall who it is. But, basically, Norman's trying to live a normal life. And it's actually, not to spoil anything, but it's actually this sister who's doing the killings. And getting her daughter mixed up in it to, like, befriend Norman and all this.
Right.
And she's the one doing it to make him look like he's doing it again. And then when all these murders start happening, he starts slipping, going, you know, oh my God, is it, it's happening again? Am I doing this again? To get him back into, you know...
I can't remember. I mean, I'm not sure if I've seen part two or not. I don't know why I wouldn't have.
I would at least recommend part two. Time. Part okay. three, I don't think it's as well received, and I don't remember it well enough to comment on it.
Okay.
But I was kind of... I saw part two maybe a year or so ago,
okay.
and I was at least pleasantly surprised that it was not bad.
Okay.
You know, that yeah. it was actually, a, you know, it followed the story, and it,
have
you
to
know,
give it a shot.
Use some of the same characters to give it some credence. Okay. So I would at least say, you know, give part two a shake, or, you know, just let it end with this, because that's
oh,
really
yeah.
what it was intended. But even the exactly. author... Robert Block wrote a Psycho 2 and a Psycho 3, or it was called Psycho
okay.
House. And I think that those books are completely different
yeah.
than... I mean, apart from the first one being different
right.
in many ways as well, especially in its depiction of Norman, the second two books are completely different than the film versions. So, that is
cool.
Psycho. I'd say probably one of the classiest films that we've reviewed so far. The most famous horror movie house that there is... In
yep.
movie history,
oh, yeah.
The most recognizable. And if you haven't seen it, you owe it to yourself to watch this great film. Sorry if we spoiled it for you and you haven't seen it, but we warned you.
Yeah, without a doubt, one of the best.
Hitchcock,
man ever.
Master of suspense. Not so much horror. He this is an exception, really, to the types of films
right,
that he did.
Yeah.
He didn't do films like this very often.
But I tell you what, if you really enjoy this movie,
mm-hmm.
it may pull you in as an Alfred Hitchcock fan. Go
yeah.
back and watch.
Try Rear Window, especially.
Yes.
And I
Stranger
would say,
on a Train.
Strangers on a Train.
Don't
and,
ask me why. I just I love that movie.
And North
movie.
By Northwest, just fantastic.
Yes. Give them all
North
a
by
shot,
Northwest, man. I love. Just you
yeah.
know, it's Cary Grant, and it's just Mistaken Identity, and just oh.
Oh,
like
good.
Like in the first 20 minutes of the film, I'm just like, this is great.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great movie.
You gotta love it.
So, yeah, I remember just, you know, watching a lot of these old movies with my mom, like on Sundays, Turner Classic Movies or whatever when I was a younger kid before I would go out and do things with my friends and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's how I watch a lot of these old films. We were talking about
exactly.
Arsenic and Old Lace before the podcast.
Oh.
That's one we might want to do for you here pretty soon. That's
yeah.
that's a cool one with Cary Grant as well.
Oh, yeah.
That might be coming up soon. That's one I haven't seen in a long time, and now you got me in the mood for it.
Great movie, yeah.
And we've got a cool idea for Halloween time. We were talking. We might bring our children on, and we were talking about doing like some Three Stooges, Little Rascals that have like a Halloween theme or a horror theme to
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
and kind of watching them on the screen here. And
Spooks, Three Stooges, and yeah. So we're gonna have
there's some little rascals that are kind of
monster bash. We're gonna
have. Maybe let them get in their costumes or dress up a little bit, and we'll try to spread it out here a little bit so you can see everybody.
Oh yeah.
But we thought because they've been bugging us to be on here. So. My daughter especially.
I may film us all go trick or treating.
Yeah, you think?
What the heck? Why not?
All
right. Anyways, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the kids will love it. They're bugging us to get on here. So
right. So this might be the occasion to do it. Coming up in Halloween time. We'll do that for a fun one for you guys. You can have your kids watch it with us too.
Heck yeah.
So we didn't decide on next week's movie to tell them yet, right? Or did?
No, we'll figure it out. We'll let all you guys know. Like always, yeah. Check Facebook, our website, all that stuff. The Little Monsters Movie Podcast. Anyways, that's it. We'll try to recover for next week.
Be a little blow my nose stuffed. The heavy metal right now.
Okay. Catch you next time.
See you, group.